Welcome to Inside Hillcat Nation, a different look at RSU Hillcat Athletics. Now your host, the voice of the Hillcats, Josh Haley.
We welcome you to this edition of Inside Hillcat Nation on RSU Radio, and a reminder that you can check us out on your favorite podcasting platform as well. This week, we're happy to open up the show with Dr. Brian Andrews, faculty athletic representative here at Rogers State. Dr. Andrews, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Josh. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
You and I are reunited a little bit because it goes very much back into the days of sitting at the Diamond Sports Complex for baseball and softball, and but it just kind of goes to show previous roles that you've served in here at Rogers State. But the key point there being is that you've been here for a long time and a Hillcat for sure for life.
I have been. I started in athletics in 2010. Is when I started as an assistant AD for student development, and I've been in various roles since then. So,
now talk about your role right now, faculty athletic representative, and kind of what the daily life looks like there.
Okay, so I moved to full-time faculty in 2013, and so I moved out of athletics for a few years, and then Dr. Martin, who is the dean of our school, he was the previous faculty athletic rep, and when he moved to dean full-time, I took over that job. So the FAR is it's an NCAA mandated position, so we're required to have one, and what it is a kind of an outside of athletics position. So I don't go to, the AD, or I don't answer to any coaches. I meet with the president several times a year to discuss kind of the overall academic integrity of the athletics program, the state of the athletics program. My main job, what I usually tell people is my main job as FAR is basically to ensure that student athletes get what they need academically. So I tell them, at our beginning of the year meetings, that anything they need, they can come to me. And as someone that's outside of athletics, sometimes they can come to me with things that they may not be comfortable going to an athletics administrator or their coach with. So I kind of there for them to as a sounding board in some cases where they can come talk to me about any problems that they're having, and we can try to find solutions to them.
Very good. Especially this past year, it seemed like press release after press release of academic achievement awards and how many different teams found their way on team awards for those types of things. Those have to be things, though, that when you see that are very, very pleasing to you.
Yeah, it's great to see the progress, the academic progress, as well as the competitive progress. But from my perspective, I'm always super, super happy to see student-athletes succeed academically. Our graduation rates have been going up. We get really, really top-notch student-athletes here at RSU, and that's, partly due to the integrity of the coaches and their recruiting processes. When I first started in athletics, we were NAIA, and there were not as many academic rules for NAIA athletes. And when I started, we didn't have any sort of, established academic plan. We didn't have study halls. We didn't have anything like that. So we really kind of started from scratch about 10 years ago, starting to build up the academic side of things in athletics, and to see it kind of culminate with lots of student athletes getting on the honor roll and stuff like that. It is really satisfying to see that.
I know one of the things that you've told me about previously is how much you work collectively to make sure that the eligibility is there, and especially when it comes to some sort of, perhaps it might be a medical hardship or transfers and things like that, working through all the academic parts of that to make sure that the eligibility is there.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into athletic eligibility. With the NCAA, there's a lot of strict rules that we have to follow. So I work pretty closely with Chris Ratcliffe, the AD, and Don Tatro, who's over compliance, as well as with Heidi Hoskinson, Dr. Hoskinson, who's the VP for enrollment and registrar. So we, you know, twice a year, we comb through transcripts, we look at grades, we look at progress towards degree. You know, we have to make sure that every class that a student athlete takes is giving them progress towards their declared major or minor. So there's not a lot of room, wiggle room for them to take classes that don't fit into that that particular major. So we review grades, we review GPAs, make sure that everybody's getting the hours that they need. You know, luckily there's pretty good advising through Don's office, so we don't run into a lot of problems. When we do spot one, we have to report it to our conference, report it to the NCAA, but that luckily doesn't happen very often. So we do that twice a year. Through my role as FAR, one of the things I also do is review medical hardships, like you mentioned. So anytime a student athlete is injured and has to miss any portion of the season, if they miss, there's some rules to it, obviously, but if they miss a significant portion of the season, then they can apply to get that season of eligibility back. And that's something that goes through Don's office and my office, and that's in many cases a conference decision. So I meet with the FARs from our conference, MIAA. We meet twice a year to review all the medical hardship waivers for all the schools in our conference. And so I've learned a lot about kind of the ins and outs of NCAA rules as it kind of pertains to eligibility, and especially with hardship waivers. So it's been an interesting couple of years. Like I said, I've only been doing this is my third year as FAR, and I've learned a lot in that period of time. So,
with COVID-19, of course, the NCAA extended eligibility for certain athletes in certain sports. Has there been any additional workload or extra cases to kind of make sure that some of those athletes who do want to take advantage of that extra year are academically in that spot to do so?
Yeah, that's been challenging. This year, you know, as for everybody, it's presented some challenging situations. And we've approached it as a department, as the athletics department, and I've approached it as FAR. Our conference has approached it in a way that in all cases gives kind of the benefit of the doubt to student athletes. We don't want, a student athlete to lose eligibility or not get to play or lose a season. If we can help it, we'll do what we need to do. So there's been a little bit of flexibility in how we interpret rules and things like that. The NCAA obviously has been pretty vocal about this, and so there are some individual challenges. What do you do when a kid is going to exhaust eligibility and then they get an extra year, but they're going to graduate? You know, we have here at RSU, we have a master's program, so they can always come back as a master's student, but that's not really appropriate for all of them. Figuring out what to do in those cases can be challenging. But like I said, we always try to put the student athlete first and make sure that they kind of get the opportunities that they deserve. So it's a case-by-case basis in a lot of instances.
Now, prior to coming to RSU, you were the principal investigator for Quest Archaeological Research Program, which was an endowment through Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your start in the archaeological field and also okay. How that's carried over to today, something you're still pursuing, right?
Yeah, so, the athletic stuff that I do is kind of a small part of what I do as faculty, and my academic background is in archaeology. And I started doing archaeology in 1995. So I've been doing academic archaeology for quite a while now. I spent when I was at SMU, that's where I did my PhD, and there I was lucky to have an advisor who had a large research endowment, Quest, which you mentioned. And it paid for any research that I wanted to do. So I spent almost a decade while I was in Dallas working on a site called the Mountaineer Site, which is a Folsom period site. Folsom is a cultural period here in the U.S. and North America, mostly North America, that dates to about 10,500 years ago. Wow. Right toward the end of the last ice age, things looked a lot different, obviously, here in the Americas back then. So that site, I spent, like I said, about 10 years excavating, and it's just an incredible site that has at least four stone ring structures on it. So there are these big, about 2.5 meter diameter stone ringed habitation structures that are, as far as I know, the oldest kind of substantial houses in North America.
Wow.
And again, they all date. We have bison bone out of them that dates to about 10,450 years ago. So these were all occupied contemporaneously at the same time by a single, probably extended band of hunter-gatherers. They were bison hunters. They were probably, you know, utilized plants and smaller game as well. And it looks like at this site they overwintered there. So it's up in the mountains, which is cold, and it was even colder back at the end of the last ice age. So they overwintered there. We have evidence that it's a winter occupation. All sorts of really neat things, the different, so some of the structures are clearly habitation structures where people lived and they slept in them and they cooked in them and things like that. Some of them appear to be workshops where they made like stone tools. So there's evidence that they made their projectile points in one particular structure, and then in another structure they might be processing bison bones. So there's some interesting kind of social patterns that we can study about how ancient hunter-gatherers were organized as a community. So I spent, like I said, over 10 years excavating that, and even longer. I wrote my dissertation on it, actually finished my dissertation right as I started in athletics here at RSU. And so finally, after another 10 years, the book on that site is in press right now, University of Colorado Press, so it'll be out soon. So in the meantime, after I kind of finish that up, I've done a lot of archaeology in the local area as well here in Claremore once I moved back to northeast Oklahoma. So I've excavated a site near Chelsea, Oklahoma, called the Goodson Shelter Site. It's a little sandstone overhang. It's along a creek bed. And there we found almost 8,000 years of record of human occupation. About 2 meters of deposits, dug down 2 meters and found all sorts of interesting things. Lots of deer bone, lots of projectile points. I think it was probably a hunting camp. So for about 8,000 years, it was a deer hunting camp area. And the deer bones are all kind of lower leg elements. So they were taking the good parts and taking them to some camp somewhere and kind of leaving behind everything else. So we've done a big analysis of that. I have a new report, a paper coming out on that as well in the next year or so.
We're talking with faculty athletic representative Dr. Brian Andrews. Was that spot in Chelsea somewhere that when you first came to the Claremore area that was already kind of there and people had known about and done some research work there already?
Well, there hadn't been any research there, but, you know, one of the ways archaeologists find sites is, you know, we usually don't find the sites ourselves. So this site was brought to my attention from a local artifact collector. He, you know, his hobby is walking creek beds and finding arrowheads. And he was finding a lot in the area. And so he took me out to kind of show me some of the spots where he hunts for arrowheads and showed me the site at that point. And it had been kind of dug in a little bit by amateur archaeologists, seeing what was in there, but they hadn't gone too deep. And when I saw it, I could tell, you know, I've looked at, you have to know a little bit about geology to be an archaeologist as well. And so I could look at it and I could tell geologically that there were pretty deep, potentially deep deposits there. So deep, deeply buried sediments. And so he showed me that. I got interested in it, went back and tested it later that year after he showed it to me, and turned out that, you know, we did have archaeology very deeply below the surface there. So that's the way most sites are found, by people that know the land and are out and finding stuff. So,
and is there's still a lot of potential in that area that you're still looking into?
Oh yeah, there's quite a bit. So that project is kind of part of a longer term project that I'm interested in, that I'm pursuing here in northeastern Oklahoma, looking at how prehistoric people utilize the landscape here and how that changed over time. So we're in an interesting area right on the border between the plains and the eastern woodlands. So we've got kind of the Ozarks, you know, right on the edge of the Ozarks. And over time, as the climate has shifted and changed, we've had trees here and then it's turned into plains. And so it's interesting to see how changing climatic episodes impact how humans adapt to environments. So that's a really interesting question, one that drives a lot of my research. So I'm looking at a lot of other sites in the area, trying to find habitation sites and smaller sites to put together a picture of what that change through time looks like.
Do any of the student athletes here, have they discovered that this is something that you do and just totally busted you up with questions about this?
It happens occasionally. my students in general, you know, they know that if they want to get me off topic, all they got to do is start talking about archaeology and I'll go off and we'll spend the rest of the class doing that. I've actually had, let's see, over the course of excavations, I've had a couple of student athletes out to help with excavations, kids that were in my classes. So I try to involve students as much as possible. And I do have a lot of the student athletes in my classes. So anytime I can get a student out into the field and kind of get them some hands-on, you know, experience doing science like that, I think it's really good for students to do that. So I try to keep them involved.
Absolutely. We're talking with faculty athletic representative Dr. Brian Andrews. That is very interesting. It's something always been that's piqued my interest hearing about that stuff, but especially when it's kind of in your own backyard here. Claremore initially, though, is not your backyard, though, right?
Well, no, it is, actually.
You spent a lot of time traveling, going different places.
I did. So I grew up, interestingly, on College Park Road, which is just down near campus. So I grew up in this area, and I spent a lot of time as a kid playing outside, walking creek beds, finding arrowheads. So that's what got me interested. Like a lot of, you know, kids from relatively small towns, I wanted to get out when I graduated high school. So I went to OU for my undergrad and at that point started doing archaeology out in the western part of Oklahoma. And then I went to University of Wyoming for my first master's degree, mainly because I was really interested in working with some of the best archaeologists in the world right at University of Wyoming, still are. And there's just an incredible archaeological record up in that kind of northern plains area. So I spent the next 5 or 6 years working up in that area. And then down to Dallas, but I continued working in Colorado. And so I've worked kind of all around, the Great Plains, Rocky Mountains area. Always, though, kind of in the back of my head, I was wanting to get back to this area because this is where I became interested in archaeology. And this is, you know, where I'm from. I'm a third or fourth generation Oklahoman. My family's been in this area for quite some time. So I've always been interested in knowing a little bit more about the history and prehistory of this area. So I was happy when I got back to be able to dive in and start doing some archaeology of this area.
Seeing so many other parts of the country and being involved in school in different places, that to me would only seem like it would help and enhance your connection with athletes, especially when here at RSU, athletes are coming from all over the country and the world at some point.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's most of my kind of experience as a student, I was at larger universities. So I got a kind of a picture of what it looked like. And, you know, when I was at SMU, I taught as a grad student, so I'd have a lot of the student athletes in my classes there. And, you know, traveling around, being in academics, you are around a diverse set of people. And so it did, I think, you know, expand my horizons significantly when I kind of left Claremore and got to experience all of that. And it does help because, like you said, we have, you know, a pretty diverse student athlete body here at RSU. And knowing a little bit about that diversity and having experience talking and working with diverse groups of people certainly comes in handy. It's, you know, for a lot of the kids that come into Claremore, they're coming from, you know, places that are quite a bit different. So there can be a bit of culture shock for them. And that's one of the things as FAR that I like to try to do is, you know, make their transition a little bit easier, give them the resources that they need. You know, a lot of them are a long way from family. It can be challenging for kids. And so, you know, as FAR, I try to use my experience to help them adapt to what life's like here on the RSU campus and Claremore in general.
It's been fun to talk about it with you today. Dr. Brian Andrews, faculty athletic representative here at Roger State, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Josh.
We'll be back for more on Inside Hillcat Nation. Coming up, we'll talk to the Roger State head baseball coach, Chris Klimas, and Pepe Soto, his catcher. That's coming up here on RSU Radio.